intercepted by Notre Dame.
For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
touchdown Notre Dame,
or Irish win.
He's in for touchdown. The Irish have come from behind.
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic. And Ed, currently right now I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh is playing Miami tonight. There were no hotel rooms available for me, except for a hotel about 5 miles from the stadium, which was a smoking room. And it is absolutely disgusting. The room is horrible. It smells ungodly. And on top of all of that, Notre Dame is 1-2 right now.
Well, I think that your room is roughly equivalent to the University of Pittsburgh this evening, because they seem to be stinking up the joint from the little that I've watched so far.
Yeah, they're obviously getting smoked.
Yeah, they're getting nothing going on offense. And
but hey, the good news for Pittsburgh is they play us in a couple of weeks, and that means things.
Now hold on. We're good.
All right. Well, there's the first order of topic on that subject. So the big question is, and surprisingly, I'm kind of jesting in all this because I really don't think it's as bad as it is, and I do think that in listening to Brian Kelly's press conference, he's trying to convince everybody else the same thing. But if you think about it, we're literally one play away from being 3-0. And I say one play because had the referees called it correctly, that game is a win for Notre Dame, not a loss.
Well, the kid might have made a 51-yard field goal, or they could have gone for it and made it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know about one play, but I agree with you that there isn't a whole. But the thing is the reason that it's so important is because the real issue, as we've talked about all season with this team, is between the ears. It's their fragile psyche. It's the habit of losing. It's the idea when you get into the last 5 minutes of the game of trepidation that something bad is going to happen, as opposed to we are going to get this done, damn it, and nobody's going to stop us from doing it. This game belongs to us, and nobody's going to take it from us. It's just a real difference. And I think, you know, Kelly talked about that a little bit this week. It's really just the difference between, you know, a winning football program that expects to win, that walks on the field ready to win, and fully expecting to win. And the only way that that happens is by winning. You know, winning leads to winning.
Yeah, no, I agree. I literally thought tonight, what do you say if Saturday, and Sanford's
obviously
a good football team.
By the way, Wonstadt is just busting the blood vessels all over his old crazy craggy face right now.
Well,
he just is getting no effort out of his team right now, and it's
he's seeing his absolute season crumble before him. A season which they thought had every bit
as much potential
of,
as, you know, any
potential of being in the top 10. I mean, Pittsburgh looked like a top 10 team
on paper,
going into the season, so it's completely imploding on him, and that's all the more that he. I mean, the sad part is that is the epitome of Wonstadt. His entire career has been that. It's been underachieving with the team that he had.
It's
unfortunately, but anyways, great guy, great recruiter.
He was pretty prominently mentioned for the Notre Dame job several times.
He was, actually, he was. You're right, top five, I think, two times around. But yeah, not that would have been a good thing.
Sorry. Off track.
So yeah, I was, that's all right. My point was this: what do you say to your defense if come Saturday, there's 3 minutes to go in the game, we just scored to go up 27-24 and the ball spotted at the 20-yard line after a kick through the end zone? You gather your defense together, and what does
Brian hopefully you don't Kelly have to say too much. You know, hopefully it's way past the time of impressing upon them the importance of the next series of downs. It's basically all about, you know, what coverage we're going to be in, how we're going to be aligned, what our assignments are, and go out and do it. I mean, you know, it's really, you know, games aren't won and lost by kind of inspirational speeches right before you hit the field. it's the old, you know, John Wooden, you know, perfect practice makes perfect, or, you know, the preparation part of it. So hopefully they go out there and they kind of rely on what they've learned during the week, and they're not even thinking about the ramifications of not making the play. That's, I think, what the issue is, the mental toughness issue is. You're going out there expecting to make plays. You're going out there expecting to stop them. It's not even crossing your mind, oh my gosh, we possibly could blow another one. So I think as a coach, you don't even introduce the possibility that something bad is going to happen by saying, okay, guys, we got another chance here, but this time we're going to get it done. I think what you do is you just kind of focus on, okay, this is how we're going to set up. We're going to play soft on this, and we got to keep them out of field goal range. So we're basically going to play our straight defensive set and try and get a four and out, you know, or I don't know, but I can't imagine that
I had a little different mode. My thought was that if you're Brian Kelly, you walk into the huddle and you say out to that team, hey, there's been enough of this. You guys need to make a play. Make it happen now. We're putting a stop to this now. And you flat out challenge them right then and there.
Yeah, maybe you do that.
Play.
I don't know. You know, I've never coached football or
been in
a huddle.
I don't know. That's my gut instinct.
That to me sounds like, you know, any given Sunday, or you know, that sounds like Newt Rockne All-American or the longest yard, or, you know, that it makes great for television.
Really could care less, right? I really could care less what he says, as long as it works. You know, if he takes your approach, that's fine. As long as we stop him, I'm okay. I'm just simply saying, I'm at a point where I'm frustrated and I'm thinking, all right, at least put that one on the line.
Yeah. No, Lord knows that's what we're all going to be saying to ourselves. If he's not giving that speech to his defense, we're all giving ourselves that same pep talk. At the same time, we're crossing our fingers and crossing our legs and holding our breath, and our palms are getting sweaty, and our hearts are beating out of our chest, because there is the Notre Dame fan has probably a more of a bruised psyche than these, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. They're a lot more resilient, probably. You know, they've probably don't go to bed at night still seeing Adrian Dantley's kid, you know, scoring touchdowns on us in the snow. You know, I don't think they go to bed at night thinking about, you know, or walk around during the day thinking about last year's Stanford game, or maybe they do. I don't know. I do think that just in kind of, you know, and actually it's interesting, because I think if you follow a few Notre Dame players on Twitter, I don't know if it's you know, but they do seem to be way into football and way into what's going on, and way into, you know, like this game tonight hitting Miami, and way into Monday Night Football, and commenting on, you know, how guys are playing and how tough they are, and, you know, getting ready to go to work. And, you know, that might be all nonsense for public consumption. It might just be, you know, we're all kind of caught up in this social media world. But I think one of the issues of today's, you know, athlete has been kind of a lack of you know, kind of passion for the game, you know, because they're kind of almost bred to be athletes by, you know, parents who kind of recognize some talent, as opposed to just absolutely getting off on playing football and loving all kinds of football and competing and, you know, being students of the game and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I think that you know, that this team seems to generally enjoy playing, and so far are sticking together. But you know as well as I do that could go south in a hurry without some success. You know, it's just hard to roll out there for practice every Monday after another discouraging loss, and then you start pointing fingers, and then you start wondering if this coaching staff is really pointing you in the right direction. Or if you're a Michael Floyd or a Manti Te'o or a Kyle Rudolph, you start wondering if, you know, your pro prospects are getting hurt. And maybe you don't go all out because you don't want to risk injury for a season that you've counted as lost. Or, you know, I hate to say those things, but they happen. We've seen them happen in the last several years. So, I mean, I still think that Smarja was mailing it in, you know, towards the, you know, latter half of his last year. And, You know, I mean, that's one thing that I will always defend Jimmy about is, you know, he knew he was going pro long before the announced decision last year, but he played hard right up to the last hit he took in a Notre Dame uniform, and I think he can be really proud of how he played.
All right, Ed. So, you know, now we've got Stanford coming in, and obviously this is no gimme like we thought maybe it might have been prior to the season starting. But Harbaugh is so into it when he's up like 63-10, he's going for it on fourth down. That's basically what we can expect. And they're obviously a good football team. I mean, apparently they're number one in the nation in pass defense, that which doesn't probably bode well for us.
Yeah, I mean they've really. I mean, you know, it's going to be their first test of the year by a long shot. I mean, the teams that they played thus far, Sacramento State, I think UCLA and Wake, had really big quarterback issues. I mean, obviously Dane Crist is not an All-American perhaps yet. But his development is head and shoulders above the team. You know, so I number one in pass defense, I think, after the three games that they've played so far. Yeah, it's impressive, but I'm not quite sure it's really a
now ESPN.
But I do think that Stanford could end up, as we look back at the end of the year, being the best team we play this year. I mean, they're the biggest thing to me is that Stanford's. You know, they would, the last several years, I mean, you know, Harbaugh, especially when he took over, I mean, their defense was just porous. You know, they just didn't have the horses, they didn't have the athletes, they didn't have whatever. But their defense has come a long way in the last two or three years. And I think that's why they're a much more complete, solid football team with a real chance to finish the season in the top 10.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. ESPN did a thing earlier in the week, and I jumped in about the middle of it. But the premise of the spot that they did was, here are the undefeated teams currently today heading into this weekend's matchups, and here are the teams that we think are potential pretenders because they haven't played anybody. And they had like six teams mentioned, but I came in with like fourth through sixth, and none of them were the Notre Dame-Stanford matchup. Was that the case, or do you remember seeing that at all?
No, I didn't see that. I mean, I do know it is kind of interesting. Somebody noted that, you know, Boise goes on the road to Oregon State this weekend. Or, I'm sorry, I think Oregon State to Boise, of course, because, you know, Oregon State painted their field blue to get ready for that game. And Stanford, obviously, is coming to South Bend. And I'm not quite sure. I remember another Pac-10 team is going to Austin, you know, to play the Longhorns. So that's I've always thought that the Pac-10 seems out of the major conferences, the Pac-10 seems the most willing to go on the road to play quality opponents. And they almost have to, because they really get the short shaft a lot of times. Not as much anymore, but for a lot of times they would get the short shaft in terms of national attention because the games were on late. You know, now with primetime football on Saturday nights, kind of a regular thing as part of the. Not just on ESPN, but on ABC, et cetera, I think the Pac-10 has really caught up, and obviously USC's resurgence about 10 years ago with Pete Carroll played a big role in that. But you know, contrast that with the Big Ten, who's playing a bunch of MAC teams at home this weekend as they, you know, head into their conference schedule. So, I don't know whether to think Stanford's overrated or underrated. I think it's just really hard to tell. It's just a function of their schedule. Hell, when they made the schedule, UCLA was probably considered to be a top 1, 2, 3 team in the Pac-10 or something. And they thought that was going to be their early season test, and they were going to work out some kinks against Sacramento State. Wake has had good teams, you know, in the last 10 years, some pretty good teams. Not this year, but... So I think it gets pretty hard to make a judgment, but I think that they're a terrific story, just in terms of, you know, taking a program and completely changing the mentality of a program from a finesse program, certainly under Bill Walsh, that always was a little lacking on the defensive side of the ball. A few great individual players, but not really a cohesive shutdown unit. Not that they have one now, but now they're just a tough physical kind of run first, play action, kind of image of their,
right.
you know, built image of their quarterback football.
What, so, you know, obviously going into this game,
I mean, coach.
Yeah, the biggest yeah. fear going into this game right now is you've got a Notre Dame football program that in years past, I mean, obviously if this was Charlie Weiss's fourth year and we were starting out 1-2, we'd be talking right now about how Charlie has completely lost this team. For Brian Kelly heading into this now fourth game, the big question is his team not responding to him personally, and therefore the frustration sets in and we're in jeopardy of this team underachieving the rest of the year?
Well, or, you know what, though? I think that that's kind of a non-issue, and I'll tell you why. Because the fact of the matter is that if he's got guys that aren't responding, they're not going to play. I mean, he made a comment about, I can't remember if it was after the Michigan loss or after this past week, about looking around the room and having no trouble spotting phonies and seeing, being able to see fairly quickly who was just ripped up by this loss. You know, and who wasn't. And he didn't seem to indicate that there was anybody who was not all that upset about losing in the way that they lost. So if he has to, you know, if there's a bunch of freshmen and sophomores playing, or there's a handful of guys that are all in, and some other guys who are hedging their bets, I think that'll show up in who's on the field. So I don't, you know, that doesn't really bother me that much. I mean, he's building this, and he wants success to come as quickly as possible, but I don't think he's going in danger of getting into a situation where, you know, he's got a team that's quitting on him. Certainly there might be individual players that check out early, but I just don't think that they're going to play, and he'll have enough guys, you know, coming back next year that really want to turn this thing around, that he'll have something to work with, including a decent recruiting class, so that have obviously that's buying what he's selling. So I never was under any delusions that this was going to be a, you know, 1964 era, and we're 9-0 playing USC for a chance to be in a big time BCS game, if not the national championship game. I mean, I just don't think that was in the cards based on what we've seen. The schedule was too difficult up front, you know, early on. If it was flip flopped, maybe there would have been, you know, an outside chance at a special season, but I expect them to continue to get better and better.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately, that's why I think it's just right at this point, it's way too early to make accusations around that. I mean, this is the very beginning. I thought he said it very well in his press conference. This is the very beginning of a road and a journey for him and his program, and where he's going, and it's early on, and yeah, he's not happy with it. I mean, it's not fun to be 1-2 instead of 3-0, but yet they clearly could obviously be 3-0, barring just some very minor, minuscule changes here and there, and they're 3-0. So,
well, he hates losing. I mean, you could tell that.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think that's the question.
So
he's not used
not
to
an
it.
Issue, and he will just keep after it until those players hate it as much as he does. You know, and not to say that Charlie didn't hate losing. He did. I mean, they all did, but it just wasn't transferred. It just wasn't transferred to his players on the field. So, you know, another interesting sidelight, of course, this game is there's a big Notre Dame presence on the Stanford sideline. I mean, Brian Polian, who recruited a lot of the guys, and very successfully, they'll be playing for Notre Dame Saturday. Randy Hart, who only spent 1 year at Notre Dame, but obviously spent a lot of time working with Ian Williams and Ethan Johnson and Capron Lewis Moore, the guys that are, you know, our front liners on the defensive line. You know, and Conrad Ruland, who's a more or less a starting tight end for Stanford, who was a huge big-time get recruit for Charlie. And Nate Whitaker, who's their kicker, who's solid as a rock for them, kicking-wise, who got a cup of, you know, who got a chance at Notre Dame. I read this week he didn't think it was a real fair chance, but so there's all kinds of stuff going on that makes this game even more interesting.
Yeah, it definitely will be that, and hopefully you and I will be back here on the Monday talking about an Irish victory that may propel them into the momentum that they need going forward, because they absolutely need it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they asked Kelly at his press conference today whether this was, and you know, all these questions are kind of so funny. I mean, you know, like, could this get a snowball effect? And it's like, you know, I mean, well, yeah, if they win, you know, I don't care how they do it. If they win, it's going to have a positive effect. I mean, it's not really some difficult analysis at this stage in the program. It's just all about winning, learning to win, playing hard and winning, and no matter how you do it, that's going to be a step in the right direction. It's a very bottom line situation right now for the team and the program. If they lose, no matter how well they play, no matter how close it is, no matter what new way they invent to just come up a bit short, it's going to be seen as a negative by coaches, players, fans, because it's a loss. Anyway, and no matter what the referees do, no matter what they play three overtimes, it doesn't matter. This team has lost, this program has lost so many games in the last 3 or 4 years that there will be no way to spin it other than they didn't get the job done. So here we go again.
Right. Oh, that's absolutely right. Okay, good deal. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.